Welcome back to 3 Point Firefighter. Today's guest is DJ Stone. Now, DJ has been in the fire service for 24 years. He has recently retired from Fort Walton Beach, Florida, and is now the training chief at South Walton Fire District. He has a class coming up at FDIC called the Grab Analysis, where you can see actual videos of grabs in the 850 area code and discuss his firsthand knowledge of them. He also manages a fantastic Facebook page with his brother called the 850 Fireman. Now, I enjoy talking to DJ so much, and he made such an impression on me. I have changed all my children's name to DJ Stone. I've changed all my pet's name to DJ Stone. I started to change my wife's name to DJ Stone. She was not having it. But anyway, we had a fantastic talk. Please listen. Please like. Please subscribe. And with that, DJ Stone. Today's episode is brought to you by Fire Facilities. Make training count with their custom-made, all-steel live fire training facilities. Their made-in-the-USA towers and burn rooms are the best for preparing, responding, and surviving the challenges you face every day.
Is the dudes who do it, they have extensive data backing on why it works for them and works well. And they're typically very fast at extinguishing fires. Because if you want to prevent RIT, you want to make a better rescue, you want to do anything on the fire ground, including truck work, put the fire out. Simple as that. That's our mission. Fires.
I've always said that if you go from the day of Ben Franklin to today, you look at fire trucks, from horses to fire trucks, just fire trucks, it's changed a ton. Gear has changed a ton.
Yeah.
Everything's changed a ton. But the one thing that hasn't changed and never will change is quick water on the fire makes everything better. You don't even have to argue pro bar, no bar. You have to do none of that stuff. It's right. Just that. And if you focus on that as your main objective, everything else supports that. Everything else supports that. That water's got to get on the fire. It's got to get on quick. Mm-hmm. But so it's almost like you've listened to all my podcasts because you've listened to all my gripes. One is ego. I've yeah. been kicking it around. I need to do it. I want to make a sticker for 3 Point Firefighter. It's a thumbprint, and put it on your water bottle. And the idea is when you find yourself talking in a way that doesn't support the citizens, only supports you, you put your thumb on that sticker and it removes your ego.
It's good.
That's good. It's just so it brings it to front. Yeah. Because if you ask anybody about not wearing their mask when they get off, you ask anybody about not doing a 360, it's all the answer almost always is themselves. Well, I can't see or I can't do. Then you need to practice like that. So what I went from the military, the United States Air Force as a firefighter, and I went to Lexington, Kentucky for 7 years. Now, Lexington, anybody listening to the podcast knows I love that department. Why did I leave? I got custody of my kids up here. So that's the short story. Now,
sure.
They taught me early on. I had a guy, and I've talked about him a little bit on here, Greg Stapleton. He's now retired, excellent captain, and he was my first captain. He taught me. He made it really easy. He goes, look, if we got a job, put your mask on. Go to work with your mask on. You can breathe your hook in your air right before you go in, but you know, he was very citizen-oriented, and I'm talking about the 90s. This is, he was awesome. That way. Fantastic. And it was like, hey, if you got to go upstairs around the back, pull the big line in the back. I mean, that was it, right?
Yeah.
So we did that and
keeping it simple.
Great. Yeah, exactly. Then I move up here to New Albany and I started doing that. And they would look at me like I was an idiot, like my head screwed on and off. And here's where I failed. This is my failure. I let them talk me out of doing the right thing. So I quit doing it. I got yelled at for jumping off a truck to back them in the firehouse. They yelled at me for that. And I was like, now this was 20 years ago. Right. I was like, wow. It wasn't until I, got a little balls that I started doing the right thing. I've even had a captain say, middle of the night, you don't have to wear all your stuff. This is actually a pretty funny story. I'll tell you this. He'd say, oh, you don't have to wear your stuff. This, we come here all the time. And so he would jump off with his turnout pants in the middle of the night and a set of keys. That was it.
Yeah.
So I would jump off with everything. Now I wouldn't have my mask on. It was smells and bells, no fire.
Right.
And I would have a water can, and I'd have that. Matter of fact, I have one of the old ticks, those great big ones around.
Yep.
I was ready to go to work, bro. And he'd say, oh, you can take all that stuff off. And I'd say, oh, okay. And he would start walking to the building and I would just follow behind him. And I thought I told you to take that stuff off. I'm like, okay. You know, so it became a little joke. And finally, he got serious with me at the firehouse one night after I did that. He goes, when I tell you to do something, I expect you to do it. And I was confused at first. I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, I told you, when we make these runs at night, you don't have to wear all that stuff. It's going to slow you down. And I said, look, my health and safety is my job. It's not yours. Right?
That's good.
Let me take care of me. And he understood, and we didn't have any problems. I loved working with the guy. He would tell me to grab the booster line, and I'd say, yes, sir, and I'd grab the pre-connect every time. Finally, he got to the point. He goes, we'd see a header, and he'd go, I know you're just going to do what you want to do, so just do it. I'm like, all
right. That's right.
Gotcha, Cap.
Yep.
But that's what it comes down to. Is my, you know, I was afraid to step up and do the right thing, even though I knew it. I finally got the nuts to say, you know what? This is me. And we need our gear. It's called an ensemble. They show me where it says anywhere that for this situation, only wear your coat. For this situation, only wear your gloves. And it drives me nuts. So I'm a huge advocate for that. And coming off with your mask, it's just, if you're first in, when you're on a car fire, you want to talk about filthy freaking stuff. Car fires are horrible. If you ever smelt a battery on fire that's kind of open, dude, that is like the worst.
You don't want to breathe any of that.
You don't. What? And that's another thing. If you ask any firefighter, hey, would you like to die of cancer? And they'd go, no. Okay, so you're going to do everything you can to prevent it. Yes. Right. Okay, so back to what you said earlier, I'm a huge proponent of wearing your air pack in overhaul, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
If people are like, no, it's too heavy, it's too cumbersome. Again, they're the waist strap people too, that, you know, if you put your waist strap on, it's a little bit easier. But I've gotten more pushback, and, you know, I retired earlier than I planned because I felt like my morals and ethics did not align with the current way things are being done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I try to implement for the past year and a half was more of a, well, I've tried to do it for a while, but now really cancer prevention.
Yeah.
And I cannot get anybody on board. They all say, they're like, well, we got to do something. I'm like, you don't have to do any research. Type up a policy today. It says, wear your air pack on overhaul all the time. I even said, look, let's go one step further. You're breaking law. OSHA tells you to wear a respirator according to the IDLH. To me, it's simple stuff. It is simple stuff. And there's no reason for us to suffer. There's no reason for us to, we already are cool. We don't got to look cool. We're firefighters. We're not cops. They got to work at looking cool. We don't.
Well, it just bumps up against, you're right. It just bumps up against people's egos and their perceptions. Mm-hmm. And our business is so hard to push change. And not to go on a rabbit trail, but there is a connection here. If you look at what Ray McCormick and Dennis are doing with the hand nozzle right now, if it was for me and you, we would have been stuffed in a closet a long time ago. But you're talking two veterans of the fire service. Like, who are literally changing stuff in the fire service? They bring this idea forward. And for whatever reason, the whole community of firefighting is like, well, I don't know about this, right? It's very apprehensive. And I've looked at it. I've had the pleasure of flowing this nozzle and understanding it a little bit better. It's a game changer, man. And I'm not just saying that. Ask Kyle Romagus. Listen to some of the interviews that he's had on his experiences. I talked to him right after he did the live burn. He said it murdered the fire. And this is a guy that Kyle's been to a fire or two in his career. He is the probably the foremost, in my opinion, engine guy on our job right now. You know what I mean? Just like on a nerd level. And so when he makes that statement, I listen. And when guys like Ray say, hey, there's something to it, I listen. And when guys like Dennis say it, I listen. And they're not just saying it because it's a newfangled thing. It's not because it's a fog nozzle variation. But it's simply a pattern change. But so much of us in the fire service don't want to let go of our bias and our view and our perspective, because somehow or another, that's part of some identity of rightness. I don't know what it is with people. But the fact about the hand nozzle, it is putting the same water in the space, making the job easier, faster, more efficient, period. And I'm not a salesman. I just know that's the facts coming out that are slowly starting to unfold right now. In relation to that, there's resistance. there's resistance to what you're talking about with cancer stuff, with getting off the truck with our masks to go to work faster. And we are our own worst enemy sometimes
Oh my God,
because
yes.
the job is made up of type A and ultra type A's. And then now on the internet, you have a whole nother version of type A and know-it-all that exists, you know,
Social media
and
warriors.
yes, you know, and I'll just repeat something I put on social media the other day and I shared it to 850 this morning is basically this. It's our job to get inside of a structure fast. And I say that because I was listening, I don't know where I heard it, but recently I heard the analogy of someone can only hold their breath so long. Like your reflex time to get off and stretch a line to the door and to get inside, somebody may be holding their breath for that moment of time. So the point is, the citizen can only hold their breath for so long. Nobody else is going to do this. It's me and you, it's us. When that truck arrives, you are the last option to put the fire out, to make an effective positive change on a rescue, period. And we have to be fast at that. So putting a mask on average takes 30, if you're decent, 45 to a minute. That's a long time. Hold your breath for a minute. How long is that? You know, the surf was really big the other day here on the Gulf. We get some decent sized waves. I got held under and spun up and down a couple times underneath a wave, and I thought I was holding my breath for a minute. It was like maybe 7 seconds, but it felt like an eternity because of the situation I was in. Now, put that on a citizen for real. Like their house is burning down, they can't breathe, and we're dicking around with putting a mask on when we know better. We know better. So I don't know how this will be received, but I agree with you. I love the thumbprint thing. We need to kind of forgo our ego a little bit and start looking at, hey, what makes our job faster, easier, more efficient to get to the end product? You know, I could go on all kinds of trails and really piss a lot of people off when it comes to gallon flow and a lot of this out of efficiency, but I won't because it's a whole nother conversation that I'm not ready to really put out there yet. But I think we need to
Oh, I gotta
reevaluate
have
our
you
job
back
for
then because I
efficiency.
would love that conversation. I love that. So I
I
don't know if I'm
don't
gonna do it
know.
now, but
You might not agree with me, man. So I'll drop a little, and we may be able to talk in person about this at some point in the future, but no,
FDIC, brother.
it has to do with smaller handline attack packages and a little bit less GPM threshold for attack.
What type of nozzle?
So same nozzles we're using now.
Solid
Okay,
bores,
so
smooth bore.
here's what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm very much a smooth bore guy. Like I think yes, I would have one fog nozzle on the vehicle just as an option if it was mine to have, but I believe in the simplicity of the solid bore nozzle for various reasons, but I think that's the biggest win because you can't mess it up. So what's been marinating in my mind, and I'm going to piss a lot of people off, and I get it. I'm nobody, but this is just my opinion from a minimum staff standpoint. I did an experiment a couple of years ago at HROC with the 150 flow out of an 1.5 line. Key makes a line that is capable of that. And we did it. 100% we did it. I had Brush out there, Kyle, Ray, McCormick, Steve Robertson. I had all the guys from Elkhart, Stretch,
Cool.
and all these guys out there assembled in this sort of private party evaluation because everybody wanted to see it. Here's the deal. Even Key was there. Mark and Joey from Key were there. So we had like this class amongst instructors, right? It was awesome. Long story short, yes, it can be done, but it's unruly and out of control. Like it's too much of a line. It's too much on the bite end of the hose. And Dennis told me this beforehand, but he's like, man, I want you to go down the road because I've been trying for years. Got it. So what, after that, some of the studies started coming out about rescue stuff, FSRI, about how much water it takes to put a fire out. We've all seen it. That could be interpreted in many different ways. And what's compelling to me was the volume, and amount of gallonage to put these fires out was not what I once thought it was. Because, and I'm not saying it's wrong, but I've been told my whole career, what's the saying? BTU,
You gotta have more GPMs and BTUs.
GPM to BTU. I've heard that too my whole life, and I don't disagree with it. There is a breakover, but what I'm contending is, and the question I have for the American Fire Service is, is it overkill? Because since I've came in the business, 200 GPM, 180 was the threshold. Now we've bumped down to 160. Two things. One, we didn't need the excess water. It was just culturally agreed. Number two, the nozzle reaction was a big player. We realized that. Minimum staff companies, lesser firefighters are having a hard time holding on that nozzle. So they're half bailing, or they're not fully opening, or they're changing the pattern, or whatever it takes.
Yep. Right.
So I say, in light of that, 160 GPM is the gold standard. 150, I think, is the recommendation per NFPA, right? Split. The lines are split. It's understood that it's 150, but it's not stated 150. But the overall GPM being, was it 300 or something like that? Yeah. 150 is the assumption minimal. Now, mind you, when you came in, 95 gallons, 110 was probably the rule. Putting a lot of fires out. Okay.
Yeah, so 110.
Laying the foundation. So you get all that. Man, I'm going to get killed about this. But anyways, I contend and I question and I go, can the threshold be lowered to 130? Because what we did discover that day is with the same nozzles on the same hose from Key, the inch and a half combat ready, I could easily flow 130 and it felt great in my hands. And guess what? The hose was very manageable because it was smaller. There's a sense of confidence when smaller people get their hands around the hose. It's more sense of control. There's a mental aspect, number one. Number two, there is a slight weight difference. We're flowing a little less water, so two things are happening. And I would have to validate the nozzle reaction, but we're getting a less nozzle reaction, so it's easier to handle, and it's easier to put the water where it needs to go. The hose package is a little bit lighter, more efficient to move because you can get your hands around it and move more of length because of weight faster.
Yep.
Right? So with those two concepts in mind, my question is, why not? Why can't we do? Well, it's just unsafe. It's unsafe. It's unsafe. And I go, okay, so there's this department called Washington, D.C. They call them DCFD.
I know exactly what you're going to say. Inch and a half attack packages.
But their inch and a half, as I understand it, I could be wrong, is in the 130 range. That was their target package when they redid, because D.C. didn't want to go away from inch and a half. Now, I'm not saying that's the answer, but what I'm saying is, here's the hypothetical. I'm on a company now, and I have a 110-pound firefighter who is just shows up to work every day and a driver. And now I got to stretch to the second floor, or I got to stretch past two corners into a house. It's not your normal stretch. Is that going to make my push easier with average firefighters? Because I believe we're going to win in the fire service when we build efficiency and ease of use into the tools that we're using. And some people says that's an excuse, but I say that, do you want to win or not? So when you're shooting pistols, a really good quality gun, right, is going to shoot a lot smoother than one that's not built well. And it's the same sort of analogy in my mind. If I could build a package that gets us to the seat of the fire faster with less people with the same result, then that's a win. The problem is you have to compromise on your GPM, and you have to lean on to that. Now, I'm only talking about your run-of-the-mill residential house fires. I'm not talking about commercial jobs or any of that. This is the 98% of what we do as the American Fire Service. And I've been marinating on this for a long time. I'm not falling one way or another, but I tend to lean towards the reduction of GPM out of efficiency. But I know I'm on an island by myself in that thought. But I think there's some legitimacy to it.
I think if that's true, if you're on an island by yourself on this, you and me would probably be roasting coconuts together, because we've already said this. And if you focus on your citizens first and work backwards, that would change some of the way you do things. So I was one of those guys that more GPM, more better, right? But then when you factor in your resources, like the department I used to work for had three people. You had a captain, you had a sergeant, you had a pipeman. So Then I talked to Tony Carroll, retired battalion chief from DC. Mm-hmm. Yep. He turned me on to some stuff. And so I'm going to say this. I agree with you. I mm-hmm. totally agree with you. I feel as if you can manage, if you can move a hand line faster and get water. Well, the FSRI studies have already shown that it's a lot less GPMs. So actually a friend of mine, Chad Christensen, was in that study. And mm-hmm. I work for the ISFSI, the International Society of Fire Service Instructors. Mm-hmm. I'm getting ready to go to New York and teach engine ops, which is basically mm-hmm. the FSRI studies. Mm-hmm. So Chad is showing us the studies. This was a few months ago. And he said, okay, here's the five times we did this exact fire at UL. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he said, the first time we did it, I hope I got this right, two rooms vented. The first mm-hmm. time it took 252 gallons of water. Okay, that's manageable, right? And then you see these four other charts that are going down. And he got the same fire out with, again, double check, I will correct it if I'm wrong, 157 gallons of water, right? So now my mind is blown. And then he says, now he was the one doing the study. He goes, why did it drop down? And we all looked around. He goes, because we trained. This is the fifth time we did it. We practiced it. We knew what to do. All this to say, less GPMs. If it gets you to that fire quicker for them, do it. You'd be a fool not to look into it. If you don't, if your attack packages are such that they're built on the idea of GPMs only, you may not be doing it right. You know, work on your community.
It's a tough debate, and it comes at a high cost. But I think now is a better time than ever than start having this debate and questioning the GPM threshold. Not to say that it's right or wrong, but questioning out of efficiency, because what's not changing is staffing in suburban fire departments. A lot of departments have two-person companies. Mm-hmm. Some of the stations north of me where I work, two-person companies. Where I work, three-person apparatus, two-person ambulances arriving on scene. So that is our service outside of the urban setting. A lot of cities are also three-person staffing. But what also compelled me about those studies, and I've asked a lot of my friends about this, I say, well, what is it? Leaning back into the studies, is it on extinguishment? Is it GPM or is it location or is it both? Because I contend this, if you can get the line to the fire, it does not take a lot to put an entire room out. Not a lot at all. Open, close, the whole room will be paused and stopped. Now, will it be fully extinguished? No, but the danger of the compounding chain reaction of a fire event is stopped in its tracks. And I asked this other day on Engine Company Resurrection page about can somebody tell me where someone has died actively fighting a fire on any size line, period. Right. And right now, I haven't looked at it in a bit, but nobody can give me one that is the direct correlating cause. So what does that tell you? Some form of water in the environment stops the process. Now, what the breakover is, what GPM is keeping us safe if you're being pinned down? I contend that 130 is plenty to keep where you're at safe to get out of an environment or get to an area of refuge. If I was wrong, you would have a lot more people dying in the UK. They have a particular way of which they attack fires, and I'm certainly not recommending 90 gallons or 60 gallons a minute high pressure. But what I'm saying is they understand the fire dynamic a little more than we do, and they understand how to control the approach. Now the big talk is cooling on approach. I don't know how to tell people this. They've been doing that for a very long time differently over in the UK. They haven't called it that. It was something 3D, they're doing.
We did the same thing before SCBAs. Flowing and moving is not new. It's not new. It's SCBAs kind of changed the game. Our gear changed the game. And it's also not just GPMs. Here's where I failed, is I'd always look at everything as GPMs. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter is, it's not really, there's so many more variables. Who's handling the line? Mm-hmm. How many people do you have on the line? Location mm-hmm. of the fire. But here's the biggest one. Here's the biggest one I would argue is how you apply the water. Yeah. I could sit there and take 185 GPMs and spray them right mm-hmm. at the ground, and that's mm-hmm. going to be the coolest surface ever walked on, but the fire ain't going to go out. I could spray to the back wall, and all that water is going to rain down. That's not going to do any good. But if I sprayed in such a way that mimics sprinklers, which, by the way, has not changed in 80, 90 years, and yeah. cool the box, could track the gases, and knowing that that cool air is coming behind me if I'm doing it right,
yep.
That will take that 130 GPMs yep. and make it feel like 215 mm-hmm. GPMs. I'm telling you, it's you got to get out of this thing of it's only GPMs, and you got to get out of this yes. thing of we are. I get so mad thinking about that. I'm getting mad. I'm gonna go yell at my wife and kick my dog in a minute. But
dude, I get put your hand up.
Put my hand up and say, "Girl," yeah, outside that door, going like this, going, "We're gonna talk."
Yeah,
but you know, we have to be bold. We have to be aggressive. Aggressive can be a bad word. I don't mean it that yeah. way. Safety could yes. be a bad word, but I don't mean it that way. We have to understand our job better. We have to understand mm-hmm. fire dynamics. We have to understand building construction. Mm-hmm. Everything else after that correlates. You know what I'm saying? Yes. So I get kind of mad that, you know, people just accept certain things. And then you said something earlier about, you know, we're slow to like change and all that. And I've always pushed back against that, because we can go from watching Wheel of Fortune to being in a 900 degree room searching for a baby in 7 minutes.
No, that's true.
We should be the yeah. group that's ready for change. But
you know, but it's the personalities that we're drawing. Now, I will say this, and with a newer generation of people coming in, like my kids, they're in the early 20s. Change is not a big deal. Like, it comes rapidly for them, and they're okay with that. So I think what you're going to see in the next 10, 15 years is a lot of this, the debate won't be as long to get to an end product. People are going to be willing to try things and do things differently. Now, I want to say this one thing real quick, rounding back to the water application bit. So here's the irony of the statement that you just made, and this is a hand ad, unintentional, but this is the value of, I see what they're doing. It's a blade, man. Like, it's not hard to understand, but people are having a hard time wrapping their mind around it. So like you said, it doesn't take a lot of water from a sprinkler head. A sprinkler head is a broken solid stream. It is not a fog stream. It's broken because there's something in front of it. All the blade does is this, the hand that squeezes the stream into a blade pattern. So you're talking about, if, you know, I just got to work and put the water in the right space in the right place. That blade pattern is painting the brush of this space that me and you are trying to train people to work to put the nozzle. Isn't that ironic? Yep. When all we could do is say, hey, listen, man, open it, and I want you to do this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Shut the nozzle down. Ask Kyle what he did in that fire. That was the specific manner which they told him. Kyle, open the nozzle. Do not work the room. I want you to go up and down and paintbrush. That's all he did. And he said, man, when I did that, he's like, dude, I'm telling you, DJ, it was like someone just shut everything down. He was like, the room immediately cooled down. You could feel it. The nozzle is the same GPM. It's drawing the same air in behind it. But now we have a better broadcast. Why are we resistant to that? Now, put that broadcasting nozzle on a more efficient package that we could put in this turd firefighter's hands, and they could kill it. With lesser skill, is that not a win for the citizen? That's all I'm trying to say here. And, you know, I know, whatever. I mean, people, like you said in the beginning of this podcast, I really don't the people that care most to me are my family and my brother and a few of my mentors that I respect highly. And we can have, like, my brother didn't even necessarily agree with my perspective, but it's okay. You know, like, we can agree to disagree. It's just how I see it at the moment. It may change later. But I'm in the business of, I want to find and challenge a narrative to make packages more efficient, I hate to say it, for our worst end users, so we can have the most success in the street with the poorest of performing firefighters. That's all.
Yep.
You know?
I totally agree. It's a slippery slope, because then you can go right back into the lazy fireman's favorite tool, which is the booster reel.
And if yes, people argue that's that not with what me, I'm saying. Yeah.
No. That's the slippery slope. That's the bottom of the slope. But being more effective at what you do, if you don't go to work every day and go, how am I going to make my citizens safer? That could be simply as just training with your crew, listening to a podcast, you know, pulling some lines. It could be the simplest of things. Mm-hmm. And if you add on top of that, the fact that you don't know everything, you could talk to Aaron Fields about water. And I promise you, he would tell you, I don't know everything about it. I know a lot, sure. You know, mm-hmm. And if you're a little bit humble, if you're a little bit eager, and if you think about your citizens first, you're going to be a better firefighter, period. End of story.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
I've been every, think about the worst firefighters. I've been that guy. I've done that. And it's terrible because if you think about it, honestly, it comes back to ego. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't want to learn certain things because I didn't think I could learn it. I didn't want to teach certain things because I didn't know it that well, you know, but you got to really be passionate about this job. We've been given, to use your words, a lottery ticket, a winning lottery ticket mm-hmm. to be firefighters. We're not digging ditches. We're not roofing houses.
Nope.
Nothing wrong with that. I've done both.
Right.
And I hated both.
Me too.
But
it's hard work.
It is definitely very physical work, and it doesn't really work your brain all that much, which I think firefighting is. I hate when people say this is a blue collar job. It used to be. It's not mm-hmm. a white collar job. It's a light blue collar job because.
Yeah, I agree.
The science is there now. The science is showing us what we did wrong and what we did right. And if you fight science, to me, that's the most ridiculous thing in the world. I actually had a captain tell me during live burns, we're going to leave every door. If I open a door and window for this basement fire evolution, you're going to leave them open. And I said, no, I'm not. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm like, why would I do that? Well, right. How am I going to see? I don't know. You don't use your tick. You're a truck company.
Yeah.
Be aggressive. Yeah. And yeah. I try to teach the science behind that. It's counterproductive. It's so weird to go into a building and try to close the door. But you know what? It's our job. Our job is hard. Our citizens think we walk around with great big brass balls.
Mm-hmm.
Why not try to live up to that? Why not try to be a better firefighter for your citizens?
It's true. The science, I think it's part of a training division and officer specifically, is we have to understand the science. And then we have to be able to communicate that in the most simple, logical, common sense form. So an example of some flow path stuff, we were talking about BES the other day on our job, and we're doing what we call a quarterly test on a probationary firefighter. There's three of them. This was his final test, and they did a BES evolution, simulated, of course, and they were talking about searching beyond the room. That was a scenario. They're the truck company. They're searching beyond the room, unknown if the fire is in check, but high probability of entrapment. You know, we go in, what tools are we carrying? The culture is to carry a New York hook and irons, you know. And I said, here's the deal. New York hook slows you down. I recommend that you carry a halligan bar and axe just to have with you. But when you're searching, use your hands, right? That's your best tools, blah, blah, blah. But we got to the beyond the door bit. We got to flow path, and everyone sort of shared their bit. And I said, think about maybe doing this. I said, it is to close doors behind you. But we need to. You need to be comfortable with that. And I said, if you're uncomfortable about losing orientation in a crappy situation, bring that New York hook or bring your tool and throw it in the corner of that door and then shut the door behind you and keep going on. So if you got to bail out and you're coming back to where you thought it was, you're sweeping the floor, or maybe you have a little bit of visibility, you're going to see that tool. And now that tool is going to keep the door open. It's going to limit that flow path, but it's still going to give you an indicator back to where your safe area is. And they're like, okay, man, yeah, that's a good thought. But if you're not understanding the science and the flow path and the why behind it, that's just another dumb idea.
Right.
So to your point that we need to be looking at stuff, but not overcomplicating it, keeping it very simple for people to recall in the heat of the moment.
No, and it's not because firemen are simple or stupid. It's because we are in a chaotic crisis moment. And if we can simplify that, we're making our job better. I love the idea of having, you know, everybody has their little Survivair lights on their thing. I love them to death. I like having two. And I tell you why. As soon as you go into a room, you put it right by the door. It's on. Mm-hmm. If it's got the strobe effect, all the better. It's the same idea what you're talking about. And, you know, depending on your smoke conditions, you can turn it down towards the ground. So if you have to get down and look, you got it. But those little things really benefit the citizen. And again, that's what we got to do. We got to take our ego out of it. Now, you said the VES word. You brought this up. I want you to know. Mm-hmm. So there's a video that has made the rounds this video actually happens to be in one of our ISFSI classes that we teach. This one was cool. NFPA 1700, and it's talked about with nothing but great respect because it's cool. shown as an example of how to do stuff. You know the video I'm talking about?
I think I do.
Okay.
I think I'm aware.
For those that don't know, it's going to be down in the description. It's going to be on my Facebook and everything because it is rarely do you get to see high quality stuff done exactly like it should be done, right? I'm not saying they don't exist, but sometimes you come across a video and you're like, holy shit, that's a good video. So I was wondering if I could play it. And then if you guys are listening in your car, go check me out on YouTube because it's going to be there. I'd like to play it. It's about 3 minutes long and I'll turn the sound down. I know the sound's kind of important, but to have you discuss and tell what's going on, and then you could talk about the victim and why the sound would probably be important because it's really an interesting fire. So if you don't mind, I'd like to do that.
Yeah. So you want me to kind of just talk it through while it's happening, maybe?
Just narrate it if you don't mind.
Okay. Yeah.
And sure. if you want, I can make stuff up.
Sound effects, yeah, preferably.
Yeah, this is me saving all these babies. And okay, let's see if you can see it. Can you see it there?
Yeah, I sure can. So,
okay, so
real quick, before we get started, I'll set it up. This was about 4:30 in the morning. We had been up earlier that night running to the old folks' home because that's what we do in suburban America. Right. Half awake, on the way in, confirmed multiple call entrapment. Right, okay. Cops had gotten there. They had tried to get somebody that was trapped in a vacant. Nobody was supposed to be there. Vacant home.
Right.
So that's the setup.
Okay. And so I'll fire it up here. It's 3 minutes long, and it's such a good example of how VES should be done and how aggressive firefighting, the good aggressive firefighting should be done. Helmet cam view. Yeah, I'll try to describe it a little bit after fill in some blanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the cop, what I would call the alpha side, approaching the delta side. Every room in this house was on fire with the exception of where she retreated to, which is the back Charlie Delta corner, let's call it. And everything was boarded up, screwed, into the window frame, OSB. In my initial, when I'm pulling up on this video, my initial size up, and this is edited for time, obviously. My initial size up was small block structure stretching 150 for attack. So we were going to be in attack mode, even though we knew we had entrapment, because the next do is pretty quick. So,
and if you need me to stop it, let me know and I'll stop it.
Yeah, go ahead and pause real quick and I'll sort of catch up on what was going through our mind because it goes pretty quickly.
Okay.
When we pulled up on scene, as I'm making the corner, knowing we have a working fire, now this is if I could replay it, I would have had my mask on, but I didn't. I called back to my firefighter and we already called the line. I said, I want, the red line, a 150 line stretch because it was a small block, straight shot. No big deal. Like I'd worked with these guys for a long time. He knew what we meant.
Is this you right here in the red helmet?
Correct. Yes. We made the corner and then now I'm working on the vent. So as soon as I got
sexy ass fireman doing sexy ass fireman shit.
No, now if you attend my class, I'll get into some what went right and wrong because there were certainly some things that we could have done a lot better on this one. But as soon as I get off, I was encountered just like the video stated. Now it's a combination. What you see in the class and this is a combination of my GoPro that I had on me and then five other cops that were there on the scene. Now I get off. He says, man, she's right over here. So I'm like, oh man, I got to look at it. We make decisions on what we see. I got to see what's going on over there before I can maybe call an audible. So as soon as I made the corner, the science, the study, the flow path, all that, you see it when you watch the video, it's telling a tale. This is the last compartment of the building that's not on fire, number one. Number two, they had made a vent hole, they being the cops, and the fire was approaching very quickly to that location. Number three, when I rounded the corner, I could literally hear the woman yelling through that little hole. They couldn't get her out, she was talking, and I'm like, oh man, the only thing, this is my thought process, I looked at that and I thought the only thing that will stop this process is water somehow or another in the space. That was it. I didn't overthink it. It was just like, we got to get water there. I yelled to Scott, the fireman riding backwards, that I said, hey man, stretch that line around to the side here. And I'll say this, the question I get all the time is, man, you guys stretch a line every VES? And I'm like, no. Every VES I've had up to this point, I never stretched the line to, but the scene demanded that. The line was available. So that's why we did it. And
because you knew the flow, sorry to interrupt you, but I get excited talking about this. You knew because you studied, you know what you're doing. You saw that with that hole, the high pressure was now going to be moving to the low pressure. The cops do it, trying to do their best. They created a new flow path. They changed it. And 100%. You knew that. And that's why you called for the water.
Yes. And the question is, man, would you guys would have done that, you know, if you didn't have a report of entrapment? And I went, no, way too much fire. I would have never VES that without intel. But we had direct intel. We had confirmed entrapment. And we had very high velocity smoke. I don't really pay attention to color. I pay attention to speed. To keep it simple. If it's moving fast, fire is near. That was moving fast, fire is near. I knew two things had to happen. We had to get the window open. We had to get water into space. And we had to get masked up. And so this is edited for time because it was edited for our city council in a short clip. But I do pretty close timeline for the class, and it's like takes forever to get masked up, so it's nothing great. It's kind of embarrassing, but nothing to hide. Video doesn't hide anything, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
But yeah, so all that to say, we're now at the point pulling the board off of this window. And let me tell you, it was not coming off. It wasn't. It was just chipping away. And she is screaming in there. And so that's where we're at right now. And I'm trying to get that off as fast as I can.
All right. I fired back up. Here you are.
That's the GoPro footage there of that's me from pulling you, right? It. Yep. And at this moment, when I pulled it, I've seen the fire start coming in the window. She is literally yelling at that moment where fire is blowing out the window. She's alive. She's talking. She's screaming.
All right, I got to stop right here. Now I want you guys to go to the YouTube and watch this, because right here on this particular video at 111, so DJ knocks the bigger hole, and again, fire's predictable. If it's predictable, it's preventable. Yep. Now it has the right mix. Mm-hmm. So watching this right here, and then you saying immediately thereafter, I'm hearing her screaming. You know she's alive, because that had to be. Yeah, it had to like just mess with your head.
Yeah, so all I could just water, water, water. Oddly enough, we just had Ray McCormick over to our facility doing some regional training on hitting it hard from the yard. So if you, the video, the longer version, you see the technique that he's using. You see he's keeping it up into the overhead and he's moving it slowly. That was intentional. That wasn't happenstance.
That was water mapping. That was good.
Yes, he knew to do that. We had trained on that very thing. And so at this point, she's still verbal inside. She's still alive. Mm-hmm. Everything is still viable. He flowed. He got a quick knock. Now, right about a minute after he shut the nozzle off, a line was introduced into the front. Because that's the thing that our drivers knew and that I told them before I went through there. I even told the cops, I said, I need a line in that front door. Because I knew as soon as I'm going head in, bro, if I don't get water on that, I'm going to be in a bad way. So thankfully, my driver had put the line down. The next new company grabbed it and was flowing through the front door at this particular moment here.
But, how far away from the window was she?
Literally directly below the window. I thought in my mind, that's why I called Scott in with me. I thought in my mind, I'm like, she's right here. But this video is moving quickly. When I got in and I could hear, and I said, where are you at? I'm scanning with a camera. I got nothing. It's extremely hoarded environment with a bunch of junk. She says, mm-hmm. You're standing on me. And I went, oh my God. I said, I'm sorry. Like, we're talking. It's crazy. And so I stepped away and she's still talking. I'm like, I just can't find her. So I called Scott in. Well, long story short, humans do crazy things. She had barricaded herself under some boards and debris in that. So she survived that event because she had shielding inside of that compartment space. She had enough clean air on the bottom to stay alive, you know, and that's what's so compelling about it is like, oh, how could she survive that, you know, thermal assault? Well, she got under some stuff. Humans are going to do things that self-preserve, and that's exactly what she did.
And then the thermal assault was stopped almost immediately with excellent application of water the correct way. And
the temperature's cooled.
The temperature's cooled. The gas is contracted. Now, when gases contract, there's got to be something to replace it. There's only one thing that can replace it. And I'm not telling you. I'm telling people listening.
Yes,
cool air. So if you watch this video, golly, I just, every time I see that fire come out when you breach it, and then she's still talking, and then the water application, solid gold money, that was one of the vital things that keeping her alive, right? There's a bunch of things, but by cooling that area, even just for a little bit,
yes,
she's alive today. So I'm sorry, go right ahead. I love this video.
You're saying what I'm saying. You're 100% correct. And here's a little pitch from an FDIC class. If you want to know more and you want to see three other examples like this of actual documented rescues and what went right and what went wrong, look me up. Grab analysis at the FDIC. Or I travel around and teach it a little bit too. But yeah, I go at a bit more of a deeper dive, and exactly what you say is the point. It's not secret. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But here's the deal. You on average have 10 seconds or less to make that determination on the tactic you're going to use. So yep. If you don't know this stuff, if you don't drill for these moments in some capacity, you're going to fall back to your training. And if there is nothing there and it's an empty box, you're going to fall back to failing, essentially, or you're going to do nothing. This is not the time to do nothing. This is the time to immediately, without thinking, default to something. And I would, so some of this is luck. A lot of it is we've been down this road in a drill, this exact mm-hmm. scenario recently before this, and we have been drilling and training with this particular crew. I believe in longevity of crew. That's how you build chemistry and performance. I have been with these dudes for nearly 4 years. And so we have been through several really difficult fires and stuff together up to this point. So the performance was reflecting our discipline to train, essentially, you know, and to be students. And it's not a brag. It's just, I feel like there's a result for everything because I didn't think and process through really a lot of anything. I just responded, man. I wish I had a better piece of advice, but I just responded to kind of what was here in that moment in the most simple form. And thank God things went right that night for this woman.
Well, I'm going to say this right now, and you need to be thankful. I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but I'm going to tell you right now, you need to be thankful this is a Zoom, because I would kiss you right on the mouth, face to face.
You said kiss your wife for me.
I will kiss my wife. Her mustache is a little bit bigger. Oh, shit. Yeah, I might not say that.
That's messed up.
All right, so you land on top of her. She got debris on her, which understandably you're like, okay, I'm hearing noise, but you think you're pretty much on the floor. You see her, you call in to get help, and now we're at the point where I believe you're trying to get her up and over. Now she's still talking, right?
Mm-hmm. So what happened? We got in. I couldn't find her. I brought Scott in. We start throwing debris like crazy off of her. Mm-hmm. Almost simultaneously, Scott says, I've got her head, and then my flashlight swings, and that was part of that video, and I see her head. I'm like, hey, I got her. I'm on her right side. He said, I'm on her left side. So here's the cool thing.
Oh, that's perfect.
You know who called the lift and orchestrated getting her out? Wasn't me.
Who?
It was my fireman. He said,
really?
I got her. Okay. He said, are you ready? And I said, yeah. And we practiced this stuff. So we really didn't think about it, communicate. He said, okay, ready. 1, 2, 3, lift. He directed everything.
What's his name? I want to give him a shout out.
Scott Caskey, and he's now a driver since he was, when I promoted to battalion, everybody bumped up. The driver for this call was an officer, and Scott become a driver at my department, and he's still a driver, step-up officer to this day. But yeah, Scott Caskey is his name, and Bobby Anderson was the driver, you know, which is a whole nother conversation, but he did an outstanding job, and if he wasn't on it, we would have some serious issues as a driver. But anyhow, he came in and at the same time, and we basically co-lifted. And this is what I've changed on VES since then is it's, again, people ask, we drill all the time, sending one guy through the window. Well, my mm-hmm. question is, why would you not just bring your other guy in with you and let him window orientation as a minimum? So the question isn't, well, why do we need to? It's like, why not? Why would you not just bring him in? So that is my recommendation on VES is get inside with your partner, because this lady wasn't 110 pounds, but you know what? I needed help getting her out because of the debris, because of the challenges that we faced, because I couldn't find her. So if I would have done it differently, I would have brought him immediately. He would have dove in with me, period.
Right.
And at least stayed by the window as an orientation. It's a 10 by 10 room, man. Really, should we be that scared? I mean, let's be honest, like 10 by 10, get in, get out, you know? So That was the case. He got in and he lifted her, and we lifted her upright. We both simultaneously swung our legs up underneath where her butt and her back was to support her, and we pushed her up against the wall. That was move number one. And then without saying a word, we both moved to move number two, and we both grabbed her lower thigh and knee and lifted her up and pushed her out. And we didn't care if there was someone there to receive her or not.
You just want to get her in.
Life over limb. Yeah. She was getting out. Yep. You know. And as soon as she got out, I sent him out. I said, Scott, go ahead and get out, and I'm going to finish the search because the room is small. And if things go south, I don't want you in here with me anyways, is my thought. So just you go ahead and get out. I'm already here. Let me finish this, and then I'll join you when I get out.
That's two kisses really you would have got. Two kisses you would have got.
That was really it, and it was the most simple form. That was the first thing Scott said on the way back that night. We're heading back to the station. He goes, hey, you know, I'm like, yeah. He's like, man, there was nothing advanced about anything we did. And I said, no, and no, not at all. Very basic. All of it was basic.
So what is it? I believe it's at FDNTN. Is it Jim McCormick that said there's no advanced skills, just mastery of the basics? And all what you've described, everything you're watching is mastery of the basics. Now, when we show this video, it's kind of cool now because I can say, oh, I talked to DJ Stone about it.
But, whatever. Nobody, man.
So one thing we talk about is how she was talking in an environment.
Yes.
And you can hear her on the video. That she shouldn't have been able to survive, but because of the excellent training, all that stuff, right? She comes out. Now, when she goes up, she passes out because of the smoke.
She was out. Yeah, by the time we get her to the window, she's unconscious.
But when she got outside, did she not come back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was breathing. And
that's VES. I mean, that is wonderful.
Yeah. And wonderful. She was a homeless woman, but and I understood she lived. They took her to Birmingham. To get treatment, they flew her out to Birmingham because our hospital is a small hospital. Mm-hmm. And to my understanding, I mean, she made a recovery, but who knows where she's at? She might be on the streets. I don't. And in a weird twist of fate, she was related to another local fireman, like a cousin or something like that. That was
really
down on hard times. Yeah. So I got word that, you know, she's living and doing fine, but I've never seen her since. But it doesn't matter, does it? Like, we were doing a job that was the height of any job. That the whole reason we get into the job are for those moments. And mm-hmm. I was just lucky to be part of a successful moment. Because God knows, probably like you and many others, I've had some unsuccessful VES and searching otherwise attempts that didn't turn out that way because it wasn't the right set of circumstances and timing. And this one, we just happened to get lucky. And just to cap it off, like if you come to the class, I'll share a little bit of my opinion on maybe some of the why behind her survivability, because there was some real, you know, I mean, maybe it was a little bit of training, a little bit of luck. But in my opinion, you know, God had another person for this woman, a purpose for this woman that night, because she should not have survived. And we found some indicators that were just unbelievable. Anyways, I kind of go into that a little bit in the class, but one of the things I show in the class is the room. I don't know if you ever got pictures of the room.
No, I never saw that. I'd love to see it.
I'll send them to you after our conversation. I'll send them to you to look. But the demarcation line of destruction and fire is just remarkable. I mean, really, a human shouldn't
have lived in that. Right above her or something? Like barely above her?
It is a clear demarcation line at about the 2 foot level and above. And when I say demarcation, I mean bubbling, burned up paint above. Yet, she still survived. How does that happen? She was low to the ground. She was protected. Water entered the atmosphere and cooled it so she didn't get burned up. Fourthly, I would say there was a pretty good vent because it started burning through the roof right about the time it burned out the window. And as soon as we applied water from both directions, it cooled the environment rapidly. The downside is it probably also suppressed the smoke into her space because even in the worst of fires, right, you have an intake and an exit. Intake and exhaust. That intake is usually what, 12 inches or less to the floor. So human nature, we're going to get low as we can to breathe the cleanest air. And she did all the right things that night. And also there was no door to be, there was no door to isolate. Sorry, all you isolate people. Sometimes there's no way to isolate it. There was no door. It was a vacant structure where the door was ripped off the hinges for whatever reason.
Right. So, that is awesome, man. I'm all, this is how you do a Friday. You get to see something like that and get the backstory. And then, you know, it's awesome. I tell you what, I'm going to wrap this up. I appreciate your time so, so much. This is one of my, this is awesome. I love it. But I do want to end. Well, first, let's do this. I definitely want to see DJ Stone at FDIC. I want to see him around the country. How do people find you?
A couple ways. Of course, I'm on social media, but I'm not on TikTok. I'm just too old for that. I can't get on board. But Facebook, all the old people hang out there. David James Stone is my name on that, or 850 Fireman. And my email is 850fireman@gmail.com. Nothing I have is proprietary. I don't keep it close to the chest. I do keep the videos I share in my presentation because I don't technically have permission to give that out, right? Mm-hmm. Because of how I acquired the footage. So you got to come to class to see the extended version of the video you just saw and three other videos. But anyhow, afovafireman@gmail.com. Reach out to me. I do a bit of travel. If people want to hear the program, I travel to share it. That's really the only kind of thing that I do. It's the only story I have to tell. And then Grab Analysis, finally, at FDIC is the name of the class, the Grab Analysis. And essentially that is covering not only this call, but three other pretty dramatic grabs. And one other one I was involved as a battalion chief on right before I left my department about a year and a half ago. And so I have essentially just do what we just did right here. We go through a conversation. What worked? What didn't work? If you have questions, you ask them. I try to answer them. And it's all real life stuff. I'm not sharing other people's stories. I'm sharing my story and then my local story that I've had direct connection with each one of these. And what also I think makes it kind of unique is I interview in the program, I interview the officers and players involved with their particular grab, asking them, what was your experience? Like, what would you do differently kind of a thing? So anyways, I'm a little biased because it's the thing that I share, but I don't think you'd be disappointed if you decide to come and check it out at FDIC, you know, or not, because there's a gazillion great classes out there. But that's my pitch.
I'm going to jump on top and tell these people to run, don't walk to this class. Run. This is such a great example of science versus experience versus just playing, you know, having 2 seconds to make a decision. So it's one of the best examples out there. I applaud you for it. Now, I got to hear, what's the best firehouse prank you've played or have had played on you?
So I'm not much of a jokester or prankster. But I will say right when I got hired into a department where my brother worked. My brother was pretty well respected and well liked at this department at City of Fort Walton. It's a department that I did grow up around. And as luck would have it, my first assignment was to a pretty aggressive battalion chief and group of people at the busy station. And this battalion chief happened to know my dad and work with him and went to rookie school with him. So there was all these connections. Now, this same battalion chief also was a guy that wrote the first hydraulics manual for the state of Florida for pump operations. So he's very smart, kind of like one of us back then in 2001 when I started. And he was at the tail end of his career. So I'm brand new and, you know, I don't know what the call was. Maybe it might have been an alarm or whatever. We get a call in the middle of the night, and we work in a truck company on a busy road in our area, in a commercial area, and it's about 12:30 in the morning, and there's always people. I'm talking always people walking the street where I'm at. So everybody's asleep. It was back in the day. We had one big, giant bunk room, right? Yeah. So everyone slept in the same room, including him. We all get up and turn out. Well, he was going on the call with us. And his car was parked right next to where I was getting in at the nozzle seat on the ladder truck. And I had gym shorts on. And I don't know how it's well known, but it's well known. I, as a young man, didn't wear much underwear. So I'm there. I stepped my feet into the boots. It had to have been an alarm or a fire because I was in a hurry. I stepped my feet into the boots, and I bend down to pull my pants up. When I do that, it comes right behind me, and he just de-pants me. There's a group of people walking past the front of the firehouse when he does that. He does that, and he just starts laughing and just walks off. And those people like turn and look at me, and I'm mortified, man. I'm butt naked standing in bunker pants, and I'm trying to pull my pants up. Yeah, I think it was a fire. Like, of all times to do that, he you know, pulls this prank out on me on a serious call. And I scramble to get everything put on really quick because you never want to be the last one on the rig when you're brand new. So no. I don't even think I had a year on the job. And I just remember him laughing and just kind of walking away slowly. And the dude's looking at me and everybody is just cracking on me, man. The people out front saw it. It was terrible. But I look back and I say, that's pretty funny, man.
Like, that's pretty good.
I don't know if you could.
I wouldn't want it done to me.
Do that
but
now. Yeah. Right.
Oh,
right.
No.
Like these days, yeah. Somebody would have been offended and whatever. But it was good, man. Yeah. I haven't done
you
a lot
of. You never got
him
back?
Oh, no. Absolutely not, man. I ain't getting him back. No, he's still intimidating to this day.
Oh, wow.
When I see him, his name is Dave Messerschmidt, Chief Messerschmidt. He's a great dude, man. And he definitely impacted my career, you know, early on, and my brothers in the city we worked in a positive way. But yeah, he was a funny prankster. I'm more of a self-deprecating humor guy, you know,
I get it.
Whatever. I'm just not that quick-witted, you know what yeah. I mean? But that was a good one. I got to give him credit. That was a good one.
That sounds like a good one. Listen, brother, yeah. I've had the absolute best time. I thought we were going to go an hour. I'm so happy that we went as long as we did. I wish I didn't have a doctor's appointment, but I've got to get another penis shortening surgery. So that you know how that goes.
Hate it when those appointments with that, happen, man.
Oh, dude, it just never takes. It never takes.
Yeah. Yeah.
With that. Thank you for being on the show. You,
thank you.
Lived up
appreciate it.
To all the hype that I put it on myself about this and more so. So thank you so much, brother.
You're too kind. Thank you for the opportunity, man, to listen to Coastal Suburban Nobody. So I appreciate it. I do. I just love to talk about the job like you and a bunch of other people. So, yeah, I'm grateful for the opportunity. Thank you.
Hey, brother, stay safe.
Thank you.
Today's podcast was sponsored by Fire Facilities, industry-leading designers and manufacturers of realistic, built-to-last training structures for more than 30 years. Make your training count. Visit firefacilities.com for more information.